Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Financial Voice podcast with Anita R. Johnson. I'm so happy to be here, and I'm so excited about our show. You know, October is Breast Cancer Month, and we have a special guest here. Not only is she here on the podcast, but she's going to be on the, she is on the cover of our latest issue of Fluence, Financial Fitness for Women. And you ask, well, she's on the cover. Why? Well, she's on the cover, first of all, because it is Cancer Month. And one of the things that we talk about is how women can adjust to the financial difficulties of anything that comes along our life, an illness or of anything, divorce, so forth and so on. So this month, this quarter, we're going to be talking about that. And in this podcast, we're also going to be talking about this. So let me introduce my guest. She is Reverend Dr. Tammy Denise. How are you today, Reverend Tammy Dr. Denise?
Hello, Anita. I am well. Thank you. How are you?
Well, thank you for being with us today on Finding Your Financial Voice podcast. We're excited about having you. I know I'm excited. The whole group, the team is very, very excited. And so let me just give you a few pointers to the listeners about Reverend Dr. Tammy. She is the co-founder and president of Carrie's Touch, and it's a 501c3 nonprofit breast cancer organization established to enrich the lives of Black American women diagnosed with this disease. She is now an 18-year breast cancer survivor, and she has spent the last 15 years coaching cancer patients and family through the trauma of cancer diagnosis, treatment, and re-entering after the journey through cancer. Boy, she has a long list of accolades, and we're going to get to those too. But what I want to do is let her tell the reasoning why she decided to start Carrie's Touch, besides the point of enriching. I know the main point is enriching Black America women, but what really drove her to really do this? Take it away, Dr. Tammy.
Well, thank you so much for that gracious introduction. And I mean, we know each other, so I am so comfortable with us just acting like we're in the same room, having a cup of tea together, and you wouldn't be calling me Reverend Doctor. You'd just be calling me Tammy. Let's do that.
All right.
Let's be sisters like
Miss Tammy.
yes, Miss Anita. So, you know, as I was listening to you read my bio, it's this time of year that I start to update my bio and add another year to my survivorship and to the longevity of Carrie's Touch. So it was about 18 years ago, around this time of year, when I actually was having a lot of female complications. I had some excessive bleeding that was going on, and we couldn't figure out why it was happening. I was 39 years old, and I had a really good doctor who said, let's just do a complete panel of everything. You're 39, you'll be 40 on your next birthday. It's not too soon for you to get a mammogram. She asked me if I had a family history of breast cancer. And at the time I told her no, because I didn't know. And you know, lo and behold, we go through all of the testing processes, you know, mammogram, biopsy, and such. And we find out that I actually was diagnosed with breast cancer. Fast forward a few months until December when I was diagnosed, and I met an oncologist who tells me that we caught it early. I have a lot of treatment options, and he offered me an opportunity to participate in a clinical trial. And I asked him questions specifically about Black women with breast cancer and about how Black women were responding to the clinical clinical trial that he was offering me to participate in. Now, my response might shock you, Miss Anita, because he said that he didn't know how Black women were responding to the trial. Mm-hmm. I told him that was unacceptable. Mm-hmm. How dare you come into this exam room and offer me an opportunity at life, and you don't even know what my chances are, you know, given the fact that you've already told me that Black women die at approximately 41% higher rates than white women. You've already told me that while we caught the cancer early, it was an aggressive cancer, and you weren't sure that I would even live to see 5 years. So to tell me that I have an opportunity to participate in a clinical trial and you don't know how Black women are responding, that was unacceptable for me. Mm-hmm. And I decided in that moment that if they didn't know anything about Black women, they were going to find out something about this Black woman. And I really kind of took the position of Esther, Queen Esther from the Bible, and said, you know what? And if I die, I die. And I meant that. And every decision that I made about my breast cancer journey wasn't solely to save my life, but it was about what information could I give back to science and research about my breast cancer journey so that they could start to have information about Black women. At the time, I didn't know if, whether I was the only Black woman enrolled or if there was just a small number. I later found out that there was just a small number. And unfortunately, the way research goes is if you have less than 2% of any population, they can't even study you as a subset. Mm. So even though they needed to study Black women and how Black women were responding, they couldn't because they didn't have a large enough pool of Black women in the study. So my late sister and I decided that we were going to figure out a way to be able to provide awareness, education, and resources and support for Black women battling breast cancer.
Wow. That's a lot. That's a lot to digest. Yeah.
And that's just the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. That's a lot to digest for someone to say, well, I don't really know. You know, go ahead and take your chances, you know, that kind of stuff. Right. Mm-hmm. And we all know that being in a research project doesn't mean that it's going to work. It means that we're being studied to see how it works on our bodies and stuff. And so that is and for us as a people, you know, we don't like to do the doctor. I know I don't even like to go to the dentist to have a cap put on. So I can't even imagine, you know, even suffering from any other form of disease besides just cancer as well. Any form as to being, you know, put on going into a trial basis on anything. So was it difficult to find women who wanted to be part of the program?
Well, so let me just do a little bit of education here, and I'm glad you said what you said. So for my clinical trial that I participated in, well, let me talk about clinical trials really quickly. Clinical trials, I'm giving you the layman's definition of it, and not because I don't have the actual definition of a clinical trial pulled up, but a clinical trial is research to test, like you said, new medication. A misnomer or a myth that happens in the Black community specifically is that, you know, we say, I don't want to be a guinea pig. I don't want them testing out stuff on me, because there's a whole, there's residual from the Tuskegee trial. And so Black folks, that's not going to be me anymore. And so the reality is that, unfortunately, the Tuskegee trial was an atrocity, and it happened and it was horrific. And, you know, we are still feeling the impacts of that. The beautiful thing that came out of that trial was there were protocols put in place so something like that can't ever happen again. So it's unethical to invite a person to participate in a clinical trial and not give them at minimum what is considered standard of care. So if there is no specific treatment for your type of diagnosis, medically, they have to give you what's considered a baseline treatment that is that has been proven that can, you know, save your life or can address whatever the concern is. Another thing that Black folks don't take into consideration is any type of medication that you put in your body at one point had a clinical trial. Sudafed, you and I both suffer from allergies. We both have asthma. And so we use inhalers. Mm-hmm. We use different type of allergy medication. Those medications were part of a clinical trial at some point. Mm-hmm. So there was standard of care for the clinical trials. So and then there's different levels, phase one, phase two, phase three, phase four for the clinical trial. Phase one clinical trials are typically for people that have advanced cancers and there's no other options available, but they are provided information about the risk of taking the drug. And so you get go to the pharmacy, get a prescription filled, and it'll have a whole long list of side effects. And then it says your doctor has deemed that the benefits will outweigh the risk of you taking this medication, mm-hmm. and then you opt to take the medicine anyway, right? Mm-hmm. That's the same thing that happens with a clinical trial in phase one. By the time you get to phase three, it's gone through all of the FDA approval and it has, you know, they've worked out whatever kinks they've needed to work out in the medication. And so by the time it gets to a person like myself who was early stage breast cancer, and you know, participating in that trial, the medicine was not harmful. They were testing whether or not the medicine should be administered every 14 days or every 21 days. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Again, going back to our medication, right? We take our inhalers. Mm-hmm. They tell us how often to take the inhaler. At some point, there was a clinical trial to find out if you should take two puffs every 6 hours or if you could take it two puffs every 8 hours or, you know, and sometimes the doctor will say, okay, well, you're having, you know, a severe acute attack. So take it even more than what the directions say, then you can do that for a short time. All of that information was found out because of participating in a clinical trial. Mm. So today, that's where we are. We are no longer in the 1950s where clinical trials had no regulations and folks could be, you know, used in a very barbaric and unethical mm-hmm. ways, you know, and their lives and their livelihoods and their families for generations would suffer as a result of the wrongdoings of human beings. That is now illegal. Mm. So I just wanted to clear that up because that is a big, that's a big discussion that mm-hmm. I have when I have conversations about clinical trials and breast cancer and so on and so forth. So, so yes. So having, I didn't know what I know now mm-hmm. when I was making the decision, but what I did was I went in and I met with my researcher and I asked those same questions and we went through all of the side effects, right? It was a lot of pages. I won't shock your audience if you know, already have, but it was a lot of pages and we went through all of the possible side effects. And again, I made the Esther decision that if I die, then I die because we are going to start to find out answers about this disease and why it's impacting Black women so adversely. And so it was an easy decision for me to make because I was learning things like our women, our community is uneducated about the disease mm-hmm. itself mm-hmm. and more importantly about the treatment and the treatment side effects. I tell people, if chemotherapy is designed to kill cancer, then quite naturally, good cells are going to be taken out mm. in the process. And that's why people get so sick as a result of chemotherapy, of chemotherapy, because while it's killing the cancer cells, it's also killing good cells. And so that's why people are tired. That's why the doctors say, make sure you eat and you're hydrated, because you need your rest and hydration and proper nutrition and even exercise, if you're able to help your body replenish. Think about having the flu, right? You get the flu. You don't go through, what, 7-10 days of the flu and bounce back the very next day. You've got to rebuild your stamina. And how do you do that? You eat, you hydrate, you get back to your exercise. You know, we old school, right? We sweat it out. And we do all of the things that get us back. I know you are a yogi, so you go to yoga to rebuild your strength, to get you back to your baseline and above. And that's the same thing with going through treatment for cancer. You have to allow your body the opportunity to replenish. What happens in our community is that, unfortunately, we start to get sick, and then the myths that fly, I knew Uncle Bernie had cancer and he started the chemotherapy and he was dead within 6 weeks, or dead within 6 months, or dead within however the time period is. To that I say, none of us are going to escape death. We're all going to die at some point. So I encourage folks to not focus on death, because it's inevitable. Mm-hmm. I instead encourage folks to ask doctors, how can you help me live? And then I encourage folks to focus on making the best quality of life they can in that moment as they're navigating a cancer journey. You know, as opposed to looking at the death of it. And this is the last thing I'll say, and I'll take a pause. I know you're like, I got a ton of questions, but you're like running off like a train. I know.
No, go ahead. This is great.
Okay, good.
This is great. No, go ahead.
I try to encourage people to understand that cancer is diagnosed at different levels. Mm. So everybody's cancer outcome won't be the same. If Uncle Bernie really knew that something was happening in his body 10 years ago, and Uncle Bernie went to the doctor 2 years ago, and the doctor may have told Uncle Bernie that he has some kind of cancer. I'm not going to name a cancer, but any kind of cancer. But Uncle Bernie said, nah, I'm good. I'm not fooling with these doctors, for whatever the reason is. Mm-hmm. And then the cancer continues to advance, and then it becomes very painful and unbearable. And then Uncle Bernie goes back to the doctor. Well, at that point, the doctor doesn't have a lot of options, because the cancer has advanced to a place where, if we're coming full circle in this conversation, a place where his only options are a phase 1 clinical trial. Mm-hmm. You see where we are? Mm-hmm. So then the doctor might say, well, we can do this trial. We don't know what the outcomes are. We're testing this medication. We don't even know if this medication works or not. They have to give you the whole rundown. Mm-hmm. And at that point, the cancer is too far gone to even treat. Let's go back to the flu. A lot of medicines on like emergency, right? That emergency big dose of vitamin C medication pack. Mm-hmm. The instructions say, take at first sign that you are not feeling well, or first sign of a cold. Because if you catch it early, you can treat it and the span of the cold will be shorter. But if you wait 2 or 3 days, you can't even take it because it won't be effective. That's the same thing with cancer. If you knew 10 years ago there was something happening in your body, you go find out about it at 2 years ago, and you don't do anything about it. And now 2 years later, you come to do something about it. Well, you don't have a lot of treatment options. So I tell the community, don't be afraid of the unknown. Go get the information. That way you can make informed and educated choices about your treatment. I know people who have taken Western medicine, and I know people that have gone the natural way. And here's the truth. You got folks that did Western medicine, and at some point we all die. Mm-hmm. And you got folks that did natural medicine, and at some point, because we all die, they die too. You have to make the choice around what is most comfortable for you. After you get the information, a person with advanced stage cancer is unlikely to have positive results through naturopathic methods. They have to get the cancer under control first. That could mean surgery. That could mean some chemotherapy and such. And naturopathic doctors, they don't like any synthetic drugs in your body. So they're going to cleanse your body and strip your body of, you know, anything that might have been synthetic, so they can start with a clean palate. But at that stage, it's a very complex treatment process anyway. For both sides of the coin, you still need to start as early as possible. And you got to get the cancer. So surgery is minimum for both sides of it, whether you do naturopathic medicine or whether you go Western medicine, because you've got to get the cancer out of your body. And the best option for you to get cancer out of your body is to get it early, where you can, you know, where surgery is possible. Some cancers in our community, unfortunately, are so advanced by the time they get to the doctor, it's inoperable. So the surgeons can't do a safe surgery to remove the cancer from your body. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I'll pause and say, okay.
this is very interesting.
Okay.
And I don't mean interesting in the fact that it's interesting, but it's more educational for myself and for the listening audience, and will be great for our readers in the magazine as well. It's a little off, but it's okay, because I think this is important. Important for Black women to know, because what happens is we hate to go to the doctor. You know, that's just natural. Okay, that's just a natural thing, because it interrupts our day, right? So to speak, right? It's like, I have to work, you know, blah blah blah, you know, that kind of stuff, or I have children, or whatever the case may be. So we don't want to go to the doctor, but we know we need to go to the doctor. We don't go to the doctor for several reasons. Some of them, what I just named, and some of them, sometimes our health insurance is just whacked. Uh-huh. And we have to pay some crazy amount to see the doctor.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so that really, and then what is the cost for this kind of, you know, some of the things that you have talked about, mm-hmm. You know, just like you talked about the uncle that says, oh, I'm good. You know, maybe he is, his thing with the whole doctor scene wasn't great, or maybe he thought he didn't have the money. So mm-hmm. what happens when, as a Black woman, when we say, have you seen where they don't go? What should they do when they like, I don't have the finances to go to the doctor. Mm-hmm. Well, how can I treat this? What happens there?
Yeah, that's a beautiful question. And as you know, when I was diagnosed, I was a single mom with three kids at home. So the cost of my health was very, very expensive. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of options, and it depends on where the listeners are, you know, listening in from across the nation. And, you know, you in my bio, I think you read that, you know, Black American women, but we've had the privilege to serve women around the world, mm-hmm. In Africa, in Australia, in Spain, you name it, we've shown up. But here in America, there are programs, there are government funded programs. One is the breast and cervical treatment program, breast and cervical breast and cervical cancer treatment program. I knew I was forgetting a word. And most states have that program. And that is a program that can provide different funding for persons who are diagnosed. But that's getting to diagnosed. We don't even go get the mammograms. And while mammography can be expensive for a person, in most states and cities throughout the nation, there are programs for women to be able to get free of charge mammogram screenings. And so, you know, there's another organization that's a large organization that gets a lot of attention. I don't name them because I think that many of their practices are unethical, but I have a problem with them doing mammography screenings, and here's why. If you don't have a way for a woman to get treatment, should she be diagnosed at one of your screenings, it's almost like saying, okay, here's food for you, but you actually can't eat it. You can only watch me eat it.
Yeah.
Right? Uh-huh. So I believe that you attached to these mobile mammography or other mammography screening programs, there needs to be access made available for those women who are low income or under or uninsured to be able to have access to treatment as well. Mm-hmm. And I know that it's called Every Woman Counts. It's the Breast and Cervical Cancer Treatment Program, and it's throughout the nation. However, you also may find more luck with local organizations such as a Carrie's Touch. There's a Carrie's Touch in many states and cities across the nation out there. You got to put in a little bit of legwork, and then you know, it becomes difficult because fear sets in. You got something going on with your breast. We know about breast cancer, you know, whether we're intimately connected to it because we've had a family member or a loved one diagnosed with it, or you were like what I was, you know, almost 19 years ago. You had no real connection to it at all. So fear sets in. And what do you do? And that's right. And so then you're talking about finances. This show is about finances. But what I have found, Miss Anita, is that for so many Black women, we struggle with just basic living. Mm-hmm. We can't even get to some of these other issues that you and I are sent here to help women resolve, because we're trying to keep our lights on. We're trying to feed our children. Mm-hmm. We're trying to have gas in our car to go to work. It's having enough gas in our car to go to work. It's, you know, it's having food left over after our children have eaten for us to get a bite to eat. So we move into many situations that prevent us from being where we want to be in our finances and in our health, because we are suffering at the basic, most basic level. Right.
And that's a true statement, because I did a research paper with Maslow's hierarchy, and you know, at the bottom is just food and shelter. And if we can't even deal with food and shelter, we can never get to we can't even deal with the fact if we have some kind of, not just cancer, but any kind of sickness or illness, whether it be us or whether it be one of our family members. So those are important steps for us to, or important conversations that we need to have about just money in general. And then what happens if, you know, something happens within our bodies, to be able to take care of our bodies as well. You know, and you can say all you can say about good exercise, good food, you can be a vegan, you know, you can be all of that, but does not mean that you won't get sick. You know, you just trying to take the steps to do all those things. So it is very definitely a conversation that needs to be had.
Yeah.
I want to talk about your development and implementing of HOPE. I like this. And you were talking about that it's everywhere, you know, and I see it's Ghana, West Africa, where you've educated women and support them in the breast cancer in the African continents. I love that. And it's been accepted to the African Organization of Research and Training in Cancer and World Cancer Congress. I love Miss Tammy. I just love her. Not everybody knows why I call her my best friend. I don't even care whether she calls me that or not. I don't care whether she calls me hers or not. She's mine.
Don't start. Don't start being messy now. Stop it. So Hope and the Hope program that we implemented it in Ghana is HOPE stands for helping others through personal experience. And when I was invited to speak at one of their outreach efforts in Ghana, back in, I want to say 2011 or so. And when I went there, I learned about how advanced breast cancer was in Ghana and how few resources they had and how treatments that, you know, America used 20 years prior were considered innovative in Ghana and how similar to us here in America, how miseducation was plaguing their community and women were dying and seeing the disease advanced at levels that I had not experienced. And so when I went, I just connected with the land. I connected with the people. I connected with the culture. And there was no way I could just go over there and speak and then come back and just, you know, come into the comfort that I have here and the privilege that I have here, even as a Black American, you know, in comparison to many of our brothers and sisters on the continent, we are quite privileged. And I wanted to do something and leave behind something that could help the community. And so I met with Dr. Beatrice Wiafe and her brother, Seth. Her brother, Seth, lives here in the U.S. He lives in Los Angeles with his family, and she lives in Ghana. And I wanted to know what could I do to help the women. And so it was around, again, awareness and education. And Carrie's Touch took a team of folks to Ghana, West Africa, and we implemented the HOPE peer and nurse navigator program. Dr. Wiafe taught the nurses how to do clinical breast exams. They don't have mammography screening accessible the way we do. They don't have they don't have biopsies and things accessible the way that we do. So they have to use their hands. And so it was crucial to be able to start being able to detect what was a cancer tumor in a woman's breast through a clinical breast exam. And a clinical breast exam is none other than a breast exam that's given by a medical professional. Your doctors should be giving you a clinical breast exam at your annual visits and checkup. Right. So that's a clinical breast exam to help them to detect it. And so she taught the nurses on the medical side so that we could also put in place within each community throughout the country of Ghana, each community to be able to just have, it's almost like a community, you know, hospital or community clinic is the word I was looking for, a community clinic. So we train breast cancer patients around just basic side effects that women would experience, the nausea, losing your hair, your fingers turning black, you know, the fatigue, the memory fog and things like that. And it was really educating them that this is normal. This, you know, in most cases, it will subside, you know, after you've been off treatment for a while and had your body an opportunity to replenish. But what was happening is that in Ghana, because you have such drastic physical changes, they thought that the medication was witchcraft and it was killing the women. And so we were educating them, and these women were going back into their villages and their communities and passing that knowledge. It's, you know, it's just like having a BFF, right? Mm-hmm. You have something go on, you call your BFF, you want to talk about it, and your BFF says, oh, girl, I had that too. And then you find, oh, okay, these could be normal experiences that I'm having. And then it makes it a little bit better to cope with, a little bit easier to cope with, and then you cope with it together. Same thing with going through a cancer treatment. Oh God, you know, I can't keep anything down. You know what? I went through that as well. And the peer navigators, just like here in America, we don't give medical advice. I am not a doctor. I am not licensed or trained to give any medical advice. I share with you from my personal experience and from the experiences of the thousands of women that I've had the privilege to journey with over the past 17 years.
Wow. I love it. I love it. I don't even know where to. I don't even know where to begin, to start, to stop. I just don't know, because it's such great information about this. It's educational, and we really need to know these things when we go into, because you know, when you and I met, we had our moment.
I keep telling you, don't get messy, Miss Anita.
I know. But I'm really happy, as glad. I don't even know the words to put it, that we have this opportunity for us to have this conversation and to bring this to the public, so that they will know, to our women who should know this information. Now, if you don't think that Miss Tammy knows what she's doing, here's some good stuff for you. She has penned a number one bestseller called The Power of Hope: Reclaiming Your Life After Tragedy. And it talks about, you know, how she navigated the murky waters of trauma and grief after a loss. And then she also has been on TEDx Talk. Whoa, I'm still trying to get there, right? They keep turning me down. And it's called Toxic Strength: Dismantles the Strong Black Woman Troop, about all things that here's the strong, let me just say, strong Black woman. I could do anything and everything. That's it. That's, you know, that's, if you want to talk about strong, because I know some days I feel that way, and I still try to do it, even when I'm not feeling like trying to do it, even when my body is tired, my mind is tired. And I don't know why we feel like we need to do that, but we need to take our time. And I know that Miss Tammy takes her times off and and shuts down, and I can't even get a phone call in. And but I love it. So tell a little bit about the book, mm-hmm. and the Toxic Strength. You know, mm-hmm. tell a little bit about both of those things. What made you go to that?
Yeah. So toxic strength, I define as being all things to all people all the time, perfectly, while suffering alone in silence. And that is how I define, I also define the strong Black woman syndrome, or the superwoman syndrome, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like you said, we get up before everybody else, we go to bed after everybody else, and all we have are the midnight hour tears, where only God and us knows that we are suffering or struggling from anything from mental to physical to emotional to spiritual to financial and beyond. And I am saying that type of strength is what is killing us as Black women specifically. I'm not saying nobody else doesn't fall in that group. My focus and my target audience is Black women. And so almost 10 years ago, I had the worst year of my life. In 2013, I lost my sister in May of 2013. I went to Ghana and built the program in August and September of 2013. I came back. I had a speaking engagement. I fell and ended up having a back surgery that left me bedridden for 4 months in a body cast. That was in September, the end of September. In October of 2013, my estranged dad died, and I found out while I was in rehab for my back, learning to walk again. I hadn't talked to him in almost 5 years. And I find out that he died, and I took it so hard. And the therapist came in and she said, "You and your dad must have been really close." I said, "No, it's actually the opposite." I said, "I'm actually angry that he died, and now we can never resolve the unresolved issues that he and I had." And then in December, the bottom fell out. Most folks are probably saying, "Well, geez, hadn't the bottom already fallen out?" But I still was strong Black womaning, powering through. And my son was murdered in December of 2013. And after my son was murdered, I threw in the white towel and I said, "Uncle, I quit. I give. Okay, I don't want to play anymore." And my son's birthday is March 4th. It's the only day of the year that gives us a command. March 4th, keep moving forward. And so even though I had thrown in the towel, there was something in the back of my head that said, "You still got to keep moving. You still got to keep moving." But I had nothing. I had absolutely nothing in me to fight with. And I had this peculiar relationship with God at that time. You know, God has always been a part of my life since ever I can remember. Grew up in church. You know, I just celebrated my 20th anniversary as a woman in ministry. So God has always been ever present. And, you know, when I was diagnosed with breast cancer, God and I, we went through our things, and God, you know, I stood on scriptures and God. But in the moments after losing my son, and in the moments, the days, the weeks, the months, God became very complex, because on one hand, God was as faithful as Lamentations 3, 22 and 23, where God promises to give us new mercies every single day. And I started holding God accountable to that. God, you said you were going to give me new mercies every day. I'm angry because I've lost my sister, who was my best friend and business partner. I've got this body cast on. I've lost my dad. And now I've lost my baby boy. Okay, show me some mercies. Where are they? And it's goes into the scriptures that say that, you know, you look for God and you look for God, and it's like, was he in the earthquake? No, God is not in the earthquake. Was he in the strong winds? No, God wasn't in the strong winds. And then a small whisper, and that's where you find God. And I found God giving me new mercies as I lie in bed, looking up at the ceiling, and tears would just stream out down my face. And I'd get a text message: "I love you." It's people I haven't heard from in years. People I had to ask people, "Who is this person?" People I didn't even know were praying for me and reminding me that they loved me. And what that was for me in those moments, it was a connection to God's unconditional, unfailing love for me. And it was God's mercies showing up in every day for me. And so the book is about my lifetime of trauma. It addresses breast cancer. It you know, the impetus of the book is for my son, losing my son. But it also addresses, you know, a lifetime of trauma from breast cancer, from being, I call myself a product of domestic violence. You know, my mom was a victim of domestic violence, and her abuser took her life in front of myself and my siblings when I was the eldest child. And at 11, you know, witnessing your mom's murder is pretty traumatic. And so, you know, a lifetime of trauma, and the only constant in my life was having hope that God would not leave me or forsake me. And to this day, I still live and move in that same hope that God is still big enough to be what I need God to be in any season of my life. You know, there are dark days, right? There are dark days. We are living in some difficult times, with so much death happening since 2020, so much personal loss since 2020, and still God. I believe that if we can have the hope that God is available to us and that God can sustain us, then we can live, and life is available to us. Black people, Black women have such difficulties in life. The life feels unfair to us because of the horrific experiences that we have every single day. And through God, there is hope.
Ooh, Lord. We had a sermon today, Reverend. I have to call you Reverend Tammy Denise on that one. Definitely. Well, I want to thank you for being part of Finding Your Financial Voice. We had a great discussion about your organization, Carrie's Touch, and educate, and I was truly educated. I did not get to all my questions, but that's okay.
I'll come back.
Yes, that's okay. And remember that October is Breast Cancer Month, Awareness Month. And, you know, make sure that you go to Carrie's Touch. How can someone find Carrie's Touch if they need that?
Right. We're on all the social channels. Just put in Carrie's Touch on your search bar. We're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and even TikTok. And you can find us on the website. I can tell you what our website is. Our web address is www.carriestouch.org, or you can just plop us in Google and look up Carrie's Touch. That's C-A-R-R-I-E apostrophe S and touch, T-O-U-C-H. I want to leave your folks with this. Three main things, since we want to circle back to breast cancer. Ladies, check your breast. Get to know what feels normal and what looks normal for your breast. Look at your breast in the mirror. Stand in the mirror, put your hands on your hips and look at your breast. Then turn to the side, look at your breast. Turn to the other side, look at your breast. Bend over, raise your arms and see what looks normal for your breast. Touch your breast. You know, we don't have time to get into a breast exam, a proper way to do a self-breast exam, but it's on our website. Talk to your doctors. When you go to your doctors, say, hey, I would like you to do a clinical breast exam on me. Mm-hmm. And women who are age 40 and over, go get your annual mammograms. If you have a family history, you might need to get a mammogram earlier than that, but that'll be a conversation that you have with your doctor and with your family. Don't be afraid. Get informed and educated, and instead be empowered.
Whew, thank you. Thank you, Miss Tammy. I want to thank you so much for being with us. We will definitely have to have you back, and hopefully we can have you as we continue to showcase you at on Affluence, we will definitely have to schedule you for some other things so that you can come back and educate us some more. I'm excited about this this education that I have received today, because breast cancer does run in my family. And I am an advocate for getting my mammograms. I don't do the standing in the mirror thing, but I may have to start doing that. I may have to start doing that. So thank you. Thank you so much. I want to thank our listeners for being faithful listeners out in the land of podcast and radio and so forth. And this has been Finding Your Financial Voice with your host, Anita R. Johnson. And I will see you the next time. Thank you so, so much. Thank you, Miss Tammy.
Thank you for having me. Mm-hmm.